All right, it is time on the second Saturday of the month for Visigoth Raw and Live. And here we are once again. We thank Big Jim out in Illinois for making this happen. I hope that's not you, Jim. Oh, please tell me you're not getting feedback again. And who's with us today is somebody who I found out about because Ange found him and his show and took an understandable interest in what he did. And I guess it took about a year or so, but she kind of hooked us both up. And he had the questionable discernment to have me on his show. He was kind enough to do that. And I thank him for it. And now I'm going to return the favor. But it's someone you should hear because he's somebody else who doesn't suffer fools very easily and understands that things go bump in the night. And he comes from another, I guess you could say, position, if you will, attitude than a lot of other folks have. And so from GoFindTheOthers.com, we have Jacob Appelman. And Jacob, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for the invite. It's my pleasure.
And I do want to ask you, you had an interesting life of sorts, and as much as you might want to share it, that's completely up to you. A little bit probably a different upbringing than a lot of us. But I'm wondering, and I think you're going to tell us, whether or not that led to at least some kind of free thinking that broke the strictures of the public school system and allowed you to read between the lines. And so if you can tell us how you came to know that things definitely do go bump in the night, would you share that with us now?
Absolutely. We can do the semi-short version, but like most tales, there's it's the whole thing's a journey. But basically, I was born in 1977, so the bulk of let's say the conspiracy was well underway at that point. But I was raised by a and foul language is fair game today, correct?
Knowing me.
I was raised by a bullshitter, so my bullshit detector has always been, fine-tuned. I've been able to, sort through outward speech and look at deeper meanings of things. The interesting part of my upbringing included the life of what most consider like a military family, only we were on the opposite end of things. Like I said, I was born in 77. That makes me 34. My current residence is like the 56th place I've lived, over five states, as residences, but I've also been to, virtually all the 50, lower, or all 48 of the lower. So I've been around and got to do, see things from many angles. I didn't do the one church and the one school and the one house thing. So my upbringing in and of itself, kind of forced me to look at things from a variety of angles. And the reasons we were moving weren't because of promotions or transfers. They were because, tax bills and other bills were mounting too high. And so off we went. But that, definitely led me in the direction of, like I said, looking at things from many points of views, and these were mountain states. I've lived in, Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, Kansas, Missouri, from the mountains on down to the plains, even a geographical perspective on things. And I actually attribute this, I was born in Casper, Wyoming. The Rocky Mountains obviously run north and south from about Mexico to Canada. But right there in Wyoming in Casper, the chain breaks, and the mountains run east to west right around through Casper. So not only do you have, the mountain perspective, you're situated opposite than everybody else in the Rockies. So I've always looked at things sideways. Fast forwarding, like Billy Joel said, only the good die young. My father, his ways caught up to him, and he passed over when I was 12, almost 13, like a month and 10 days before my 13th birthday. And as tragic and horrible as, that kind of stuff was, you know, especially coming into your teen years. It wasn't, looking back now, it seemed kind of meant to be in a way, because though as horrible as that seemed, you know, that also let me start from rock bottom, if that makes sense. A lot of people, you know, come from lofty perspectives and either, you know, maintain their status quo, or sometimes, you know, they fall to the bottom. Well, and, you know, coming to be of my own personage, I started at the bottom, so I only had up to go. You know, we were dirt broke. I was on my own, essentially. That forced my mother into the three jobs and, you know, community college at night type situation. So if I wanted tennis shoes, I had to go earn them. If I wanted, you know, clothes that weren't garage sales, you know, I had to go earn them. So I started employment at a very young age, and I also knew, since my father chose the, let's say, destructive path, where that ended up. So I saw the conclusion of that race, and I figured, you know, I'll take the high road and applied myself at school. You know, graduated top of my class, finished high school at 17, you know, with honors and a boatload of scholarships, and went off to college. So it was about, I would say, the semester before I received my bachelor's degree, I had looked back upon my education and realized I hadn't learned anything yet that I couldn't have figured out by myself. And in fact, most of the things I found most interesting weren't talked about at school and actually discouraged, even in a university setting where you're paying for information and guidance from professors. You know, if you had questions that didn't mold to the status quo, you were, like I said, not satiated in that regard. So my quest was set. I had a bachelor's degree. We had a small child and one on the way. I figured that getting married would be the appropriate thing to do there, and that starting a family would be the most beneficial thing I could do in my immediate circle, because I knew of political corruption. I knew of economic corruption. You know, the church route was wrought with so much phoniness, it was very difficult at times. So I knew that the destruction of the family was at the core of most of these things. And I figured from that battle, starting a family and staying together, you know, doing things differently would be as high-minded a solution as I could muster with, you know, no money and barely a bachelor's degree. So that started me on my path of, let's say, doing things completely different. We immediately decided, before our firstborn could even talk, that we were going to homeschool. We did the natural birth, no vaccination route. So we were well on our way. And this, you know, is a topic worth arguing, but, you know, there's pros and cons to it, and I'm not set in concrete, but I've also entered my 15th year of not eating meat. And then, like I said, is a whole another discussion, but, you know, I was well on the way to a better diet than most, family-centered. We didn't use daycare. Though we both worked, we had opposite schedules, so we could one of us always be home with the children and still, you know, fight off the economic vultures, let's say. Well, through the grace of God, I chose the day shift, and the missus chose the evening shift, and with the firstborn and the next three that followed, all still being young children before the homeschooling really ramped up, I had quite a bit of free time between bedtime and when the missus got home at night. Lo and behold, 9/11 happens. A coworker of mine, who I would not consider crazy or, you know, fringe, mentioned to me that things aren't as they seem. Those were controlled demolitions and remote-controlled airplanes. Now, I took the kind of Ron Paulian approach of blowback that our foreign policy over the years in the Middle East had, you know, drove them to do it. But I wanted to prove this guy wrong for the sake of friendship, not to get in his face, but just so he wouldn't say such crazy things in public anymore. I had the computer expertise a Ferrari for a computer, and lots of free time in the evening to devote to this. And I'm not talking about, you know, a website here or a mention there. I'm talking 160 books, 300 DVDs. And this was before, you know, Google Video and YouTube really took off. The file sharing, Kazaa, LimeWire, ShareBear days, where I would do whole subject searches and download every picture, article, PDF, video that had any tag or keyword even related to anything 9/11 related. And I began to pour through all of it for thoroughness sake. I didn't believe or disbelieve anybody. I took it on like a detective, you know, just searching through the evidence. And it was about, 2 hours into my first night of trying to prove this guy wrong. I knew not only was the economic, religious, and educational systems, completely bass-ackwards, but now here's 9/11. Every mainstream media outlet has it wrong at the bare minimum, not even saying who did it or why. It was obvious they were lying, and my path was kind of set at that point. My oldest is now 12, and our youngest is now 3, and I still have similar habits, let's say, of multiple hours a day, jumping down all of these rabbit trails. And much like yourself, I, you know, started off at one point in the Alex Jones GCN mainstream alternative rabbit hole and quickly found that it was a dead end, and then moved on to other things, which would probably be the bulk of the rest of what we're talking about. So I've known my whole life things weren't as they were, and things went bump in the night. I confirmed it to myself along the way, and now here we are 34 years later discussing it.
Yeah, and it takes something to be motivated to not only know what's going on, but to also do a show. And, you know, you missed out on the 60s, most of the 70s, and which was a good excuse for me to realize that something was not right. And that goes back to what I've mentioned with regard to listening to veterans that came out of World War II in Korea and say stuff that kind of wasn't in my history books. And you're a little kid, you know, it's like I said, and they think you're not listening in a sense. Well, you are. You may not care. But that stuff stayed with me. And, of course, it accumulated to a point where, and honestly, you got hit probably before I did, because I just started to listen to GCN in, I guess, late 2000, but not really with any kind of dedication. Tomorrow, 10 years ago, I was up in New Jersey, and got stuck there because of what happened. And I was willing to believe the stories that came out the next day, although I did wonder how they could figure everything out since an event like that never happened before.
Right.
The New York Times is replete with, oh, this is what happened. I'm going, how the hell do you know that? I mean, every time there's an accident, usually it takes, with the National Transportation Safety Board or whatever, it takes them a while to figure it out. Well, bang, they had it down. That I thought was a little strange, but I still, kind of wasn't ready to jump ship yet. And, of course, from that point on, then everything started coming together, and off I went. I find it interesting, you being born in 77, I probably waved to you as I was going through Iowa on my second
right.
trip out to the coast. I probably had more reason to believe the way I do. Things were kind of quiet when you grew up, but that doesn't mean things aren't still going on. And that's something. Now, I'm assuming you're telling me, one, you kind of grew up faster than most children did, for obvious reasons.
Correct.
And two, you might have had a street savvy, and maybe, shall I say, and please tell us, a little bit of a distrust of kind of like all things authority, and we're willing to ask questions, especially when you realize it made people feel uncomfortable. What about that, Jacob?
Here's a perfect analogy. When I was 16 and really angry about, because they talk about the 5 stages of grief once you figure, when this trauma happens, and the trauma I'm speaking of is realizing things are not as they've been told to us. My license plates on my car, I got vanity plates that said God Who, GOD-WHO. For the simple fact of instigating such conversations as you can imagine I would have driving that car around the Bible Belt, in most of the country. You know, for, shoot, we didn't even get rid of that thing until our third child was born, and there was absolutely no way we could fit everybody in there. So for, you know, 7-8 years, I drove around the Bible Belt with license plates that said God Who, mostly out of anger. And I will say as a side note, when you ask a question that profound, that simply, that many times, it will be answered. So my leanings aren't there anymore. But yes, I shrugged all authority. I finished in the top 5% of my class and had also been to jail several times in high school. I was.
Congratulations.
That is a feat very few people can claim to achieve, because you do the jail route or you do the valedictorian route, and I did both, and with flying colors. And that's another point. They just they tell you in middle school how hard high school is going to be, and they tell you in high school how hard college is going to be. And I got straight A's all the way through everything without ever even trying. And I didn't know if I was some, latent genius, or if these people are just full of it, or I would read the Bible, and we would be in Bible study, and, we'd hear the story of Cain and Abel, and God put a mark on, Abel's head, Cain's head. So as he, was banished from the Garden of Eden, the other people wouldn't attack him. And I'm like, okay, preacher, who are these other people if these are the first two children of the first two people? Long before Jordan Maxwell, I caught that. He's like, some things don't make sense. So yes, I shrugged off all authority from the get-go. But my parents were children of the '60s. My mom was born in '53, and my dad was born in '50. So I think you're right in between there. So
yeah, close enough.
Yeah, so they had similar upbringings. So my dad joined the National Guard to avoid Vietnam, and then once he did his basic 2 years, they did the hippie thing and ran off to the mountains, in Casper to have children and hide from taxes and the next draft card. So my father was crazy in a good way. Told me before I even knew what the hell he was talking about. The limo driver probably took a shot at Kennedy. And, this is way before the internet or Bill Cooper. So, I always had a distrust of all things authoritative. I expressed it vehemently through the example of the vanity place that said God Who. And like I said, you keep asking profound questions enough out loud, and by golly, the answers will shortly arrive.
We're talking with Jacob Appelman, whose site is GoFindTheOthers.com. It was formerly known as Infowars.com. And do you want to talk about just the transformation? I obviously believe it's got something to do with you leaving the GCN stable of broadcasters.
Correct.
Tell us about that, and tell us why you call your audio suicides.
Okay. So about right after I had proved my coworker was not insane, and actually I am now his, wingman for all these conversations around the water cooler, I had amassed, like I said, about 160 books on the subjects, from, Codex Magica, from Mars, all the way to Conversations with God with Neil Donald Walsh. I was bound and determined to figure out what the hell was going on. I had 300 videos, all the way from, I saw Eric Hufschmid's Painful Questions, I think the day he uploaded it to a file share site. Yeah, so I've been in that vein the whole time, and it's not like I stopped there. I've seen them all. So one day, through, divine providence, a friend of a friend had a 5-hour overnight talk show in Kansas City. And the two mutual friends we had were having a conversation about, esoteric things, and I'll even name drop the person, David Icke, is who they were speaking of. My friend says, I don't know much about David Icke, but my cousin, meaning me, has 4 or 5 of his videos. If you want to know anything else, ask him. And he said, oh, wow, my friend has an overnight talk show, and he'll get into weird stuff like that. Maybe we should hook him up. Ben Johnson has hosted Paragon Radio since 2002 or 2003. It's been many years. And he was invited to my house. I showed him excerpts of the information I was collecting. And he was dazzled, didn't quite believe me yet, but he knew Bush was full of it. And, you know, he was kind of a Birkenstock liberal at the time. So he invited me to come, you know, be a guest on his show called Paragon Radio, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City. It's a 100,000-watt blowtorch. So it's, you know, not a little chunk.
Are you serious? 100,000 watts?
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, should be in Mexico.
Well, yeah, we get some interesting things happening because of the reach of that station, and it's it was impressive. I thought, you know, like I said, it wasn't some micro FM or a a pirate radio station. This is a full-on blowtorch in the middle of Kansas City, which has, you know, cities on both sides of the state line and the surrounding metro of 1.5 million people. We're looking probably 5 million people within good listening range of that.
But Jake, I mean, I'm astounded by it. First of all, does the FCC know that? Secondly, out in the Midwest with a little cloud cover, man, God knows where that – I should get out in my truck and see if I can pick him up.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I think we've gotten calls from Oklahoma and Nebraska of people listening to the terrestrial feed.
Oh, that's amazing stuff, man. Holy mackerel. All right, great. Okay.
So he says, narrow all this information down to, you know, like one topic we can go over, and you can be a guest on my show. I chose the Federal Reserve because as interesting as 9/11 and JFK and all of that stuff is, a lot of people, you know, think of it as a ghost story and it just flies right over their head. But everybody's got to deal with money, and they could pull out their wallet and notice that the $100 bill isn't 100 times larger than the one. And if you just ask them simply what makes that 100 times more valuable, you know, you see the wheels start spinning, and it's an easy topic to reel people into the fact that, you know, things go bump in the night. So I did a show with him on the Federal Reserve. It was a hit. He asked me to come back and do another one. And essentially, I never left until the missus was pregnant with our fourth child, and I knew getting out of the city was essential because with our full-blown homeschooling and gardening habits, we were already attracting attention from DFS and things like that for being such radical free thinkers. So we just got 100 miles outside of the city, and now I'm basically a full-time producer and a sometimes co-host. So in the midst of the growings of Paragon Radio, instead of playing a whole entire Alex Jones documentary for people who can't stand that information nor his approach, I would boil a lot of these documentaries down to the very poignant, inarguable facts, you know, the George Bush New World Order speech, David Gergen admitting he's a happy member of the Grove. You know, things like that, you know, like Arsenio Hall used to say, things that make you go, because I wasn't trying to prove anything to anybody. I was just trying to, I called them like idea seeds. You know, if you throw enough out there, you know, maybe one or two will sprout and then off it will go. So originally I would burn a CD with, you know, a dozen or so of these little clips from conspiracy videos to hopefully get people intrigued. And one day I was checking the CD to make sure, you know, all the tracks burned properly before we went live on air. And it kind of sounded neat, you know, all played together. And so with the burgeoning of YouTube and Google Video at that point, you know, different kinds of mashups and me being a radio junkie, you know, I would add transitions, clips of inspiration as well, you know, deep thinkers, the Terrence McKenna, the David Icke, you know, anybody that had something profound to say, as well as, you know, sinister and wicked, you know, kind of juxtapose them, put some music and comedy and poetry in there, and lo and behold was born a suicide. Now, that's suicide in the meaning that just like, you know, when you're little and you go get a suicide Mr. Misty from Dairy Queen or a suicide snow cone or a suicide fountain drink, there's a little bit of everything in there. So when people say, well, what am I going to listen to? you can't say it's a clip from, you know, Terror Storm, and then you got a clip from the, you, like some of these are 75 to 99 clips long. You can't go through it all. So I just called them suicides. It's a little bit of everything. And off we went with that. I'm on, oh my gosh, number 183 now I've made of those. And so at some point, we had enough people request the be posted online for further dissection of them. I put up a blog spot, just simply posting the MP3, nothing around it, just for the people at the radio station that wanted to have a copy of that, because I was burning CDs and passing them out, because I had no desire to host a website. But one thing led to another. Ange from Thinker Be Eaten ran into him about suicide number 114. She said, you know, these are cool. Who are you and what the hell is your problem? Maybe if you posted this picture with him, it would make a neat blog post. It was that one was about Abdullah Hakuna Matata in his exploding underwear. And so I made a little blog post out of it instead of just a flat MP3 posting. And InfoWarts was born. The original tagline said InfoWarts, a condition one gets from being mindfucked their whole life. And it was kind of a comical play on InfoWars, because though at that time, you know, I had some respect for Alex Jones, I even then, being in his camp, thought his aggressive, over-the-top bullhorn approach, did in more people than it woke up. And I thought the information was valuable enough that maybe if I had kind of a slightly comical angle to it, then when people searching for InfoWars, you know, InfoWarts would come up in search terms also, and people would go, oh, what the hell's an InfoWart? You know, it's like blisters in your brain from listening to all this stuff. And I thought it was hilarious until, you know, me and Alex finally had it out. I realized the shill that he was, and simultaneously came to the conclusion that maybe waking people up isn't necessarily the most beneficial way to go about this. And it was right about the time he put out Police State 4. And I was sitting down to watch it, and I said, oh, my God, Police State 4? You know, you need four movies of this. Before, you know, if you don't get it 20 minutes into Police State 1, you know, 2, 3, and 4 aren't going to help you. And I thought, there's got to be a different approach, because this topic's been covered. You know, the Bilderbergs have been covered. Bohemian Grove's been covered. 9/11's been covered. You know, that information is there. And to, you know, rehash that same info, you know, in my format may not be the best use of my time, because that's there. And I don't disparage it for what it is. It's been done. So what's the next step that needs to be taken? Well, henceforth, my direction at that point was to, one time Timothy Leary was asked, what do we do once we turn on, tune in, and drop out? He said, go find the others. And not that I think Timothy Leary was, you know, some saint and not a CIA plant. That saying stuck with me. And I thought, yeah, that's, you know, at this point, there are, you know, millions, quote unquote, of people that are awake. Why don't I just find the people who, you know, agree about a direction to go instead of try? Because, I mean, let's face it, we've all been there. We have friends and family members, you know, your pilot friend. There are some people that are not going to wake up because they don't want to. And I've said this from the beginning, you know, 9/11 being an inside out job isn't that hard to understand. Every single person on this planet could understand that if they would take the time to look at, you know, more evidence than CNN will show them. But it's the implications past that freak everybody out. It's not the actual attack. Once they admit, okay, maybe something's up, and then automatically the left-right paradigm shatters, automatically the television information paradigm shatters, automatically this defense department infrastructure we have shatter. It's the implications to admitting that to oneself that's the problem, not the actual attack, because, you know, this many years later, just looking at it, you know, I was like, how in the hell did I ever believe that, you know, jet fuel caused that? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, me too. I know.
I can't believe I even, it's like the dog and the tennis ball thing. You know, you play tennis ball with your dog, and after five or six throws, you act like you throw it, but you don't. You know, it's funny, and the dog takes off anyway. And you do it three or four more times, and you're like, seriously, wait till you see the tennis ball before you run next time. And I felt that way about Police State 4, and I thought, man, I've got to go find other people that are, you know, understand that this is a police state, understand that waking people up may not, in fact, be, you know, I think, and you speak all the time of the GCN crowd reeling people back into the phony system. Well, the two-pronged attack there is their message of go and waking everybody up. Now, like I said with planting idea seeds, I'm not opposed to that, but I know people that'll work on one family member, you know, for years and years and years, and every time they get together, it's the same argument. One's not budging and the other's not budging. That's just as fruitless as, you know, voting for Ron Paul. You're not getting anywhere. What you need to do is collaborate with people that are already aware this is a police state and offering up solutions. People that are already aware of the Vatican's influence over all international doings and work on solutions there. So hence the Go Find the Others was born. I broke up with the GCN crowd, you know, over 9/11 essentially. And that's how InfoWars disappeared and Go Find the Others came about. But all of the suicides. Oh, and then my radio show, which I do on the side as a solo gig, is called the Next Step Radio Show, which yourself was the last featured guest. And instead of getting the big names and the big hit counters, I go for people who actually know what they're talking about and can offer either A, new information that's not included in any of the police state episodes, or B, solutions that, you know, are implementable in real life. You know, because like auditing the Fed is not a real solution. Cutting up your credit cards is. You know, they're, you can fight the bankers at the street level. But so, yeah, I got GoFindTheOthers.com. My podcast is The Next Step Radio Show, as in what's the next step. Paragon Radio archives are also hosted there, and I continue to make suicides weekly, a taste of everything, not necessarily off in yourself.
I want to give the listeners a chance to have a whack at you, but we want to cover a little territory before that. There are two things I wanted to ask you, and this is, all right, this is a Visigoth Rose Bowl story. This is a warning, folks. I have to laugh. Do you remember, was it Dairy Queen that made Misty's? And 7-Eleven made Slurpees, right?
Correct.
All right, I just want to tell you real quick. I'm going to make this real fast. In my junior year, I was playing American Legion Baseball, and we would travel all around the county. And after the game was over, we would go to the nearest Dairy Queen, and we would get a Misty. We called it soup. We say, look, do you know any place around here that's got good soup? And we would go to the Dairy Queen and be careful about how fast you drink them. We all understand that. Well, one time in our hometown of Teaneck, we were on the sunny side of the building, and it was just radiating off. And we're sitting there sucking down Misties, and this guy gets off a bus, and he's got a buckskin jacket on, and he looks like Daniel Boone. And we're like, oh, that's cool. But remember, this is 1968. You expect to see this stuff. This guy gets himself a Misty, and he walks out, and I'm telling you, he did a head back on that and poured that sucker down. And then he took the empty, container, threw it in, you know, in the little waste pail thing, and we were looking going, this man is magic.
Right.
And we're like, this is incredible. And all of a sudden, he just went, ah! And he hit his back as if he was shot from a shotgun, went flat up against the side of this wall that we're talking about. And we're like, all right, that makes more sense. Because you know what that did behind your optic nerve. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's worse than acid. So anyway, I just wanted to tell you that, because when you talked about that, I always remember that day, because we really thought we had finally hit the, you know, the golden temple of the Himalayas with this guy.
Right. And yeah, everybody that's, you know, new to the suicides, you know, we've even had people call up, on the overnight show and say, I'm thinking about killing myself. Could you guys stop saying suicide so many times? And then so when you explain it to them, they immediately come up with a story very similar to that, or with a fountain drink, or, you know, or a snow cone, and then automatically, like, they're not suicidal anymore. So it worked out beautifully.
No, you're just thinking at that time you have a cerebral hemorrhage, that's all.
Right.
All right. Let's get into something topical, and I really would like folks to have a whack at you, so I don't know how long we can go through the bullet points, but since we are on the day before 9/11, 2011, and I think all of us are just trying to get through this as best we can by avoiding all things on the media.
Right.
Now, I'm going to let you take that where you want to go, because you have some thoughts about this, and obviously I just got into a big free-for-all with a whole bunch of people a month ago about this on this very show. So why don't you hit us with what your thoughts are?
All right. With this last September 11th, it was the 9th anniversary. Things seemed to be, you know, this giant circle jerk. You know, it was like watching, you know, a Seinfeld episode. I'm like, good God, haven't we seen this already? Can you please just pick a different show or something? So then it hit me that maybe we're missing something, because so much of this wouldn't get play either way if all the cards were on the table. And I thought for sure something's still being left out. You know, as much as AE 9/11 has done, you know, much as the yellow journalism crowd, the debunker crowd has done, you know, somebody's not telling me something. There's got to be another piece to this. So I went back through my almost terabytes of 9/11 information, and I saw, and I'd seen them before, but it never really came to the forefront, because I still to this day feel that the fact that they're lying on every channel, that's the point. The who's and why's and how's, I think, should be looked at and worked on, but secondarily to the fact that, you know, something else went on than what we're being told. You know, this wasn't, you know, the Muhammad Atta, the magic passports and his flying circus. Something else went on here, so I'm pouring over this information. I had these JPEGs, these just still shots of the overhead shot after 9/11, towers 3, 4, 5, and 6, you know, showed some weird damage, kind of cylindrical holes, you know, in the roof that didn't necessarily look like, you know, a random beam or piece of concrete falling. The cars parked, you know, a mile and a half away that showed really weird damage. And describing it, you know, the front end looks pristine. There's like a line of demarcation. There's no fading. And then, you know, like the rear is just toasted. Or, you know, like the tires are gone. The steel belts are there. You know, the rubber flashing between the windshield and the car is gone. But it's just all this bizarre damage. Oh, there's one with the interior of one of these cars that had a full-on oxygen tank or a propane tank, it's hard to tell, that's sitting there. The interior is completely burnt out, but yet this tank is unexploded, which didn't seem like that would be the case if this whole entire car was engulfed in flames. You know, this tank of gas, whatever it was, surely would have blown. So there's all these weird pictures that didn't really fit the thermite, you know, C4 crowd. It definitely didn't fit the kerosene crowd. And I thought, where in the hell did I get this picture? So lo and behold, I tracked it back. It did come from Dr. Judy Wood's website. And just to humor myself, because I'd gone in so many circles, you know, previous 9/11 anniversaries, you know, I gave her, like I did way back when, a non-objective here, you know, I'm going to take in all of her information without any judgment just to see what she has. And there was enough stuff in there that made me go, you know, the seismic readings that nobody disputes are less than that of the King Dome demolition was one piece that I thought intriguing. And surely if the two largest skyscrapers in the world plus Building 7 all hit the ground, that would rumble a little bit more than a hollowed out, you know, stadium. But it didn't. It was a smaller seismic reading than that of the King Dome implosion. The dust cloud that everybody's familiar with that engulfed, you know, mostly all of lower Manhattan and even started crawling out across the water seemed excessive for just, you know, dust blowing, you know, in the wind. It looked odd. Then there was things like Hurricane Aaron. I had, like I said, terabytes almost of information on 9/11, and I had never heard about Hurricane Aaron until last September. And I thought, what in the hell? There's a hurricane like 40 nautical miles off of Long Island that day, and it's, you know, not in any of these conspiracy videos. Surely the fact that they're not reporting a hurricane would at least tie into the forget the energy component. That would at least tie into the foreknowledge, because they had to keep these news channels clear for the brainwashing that was about to ensue. So they couldn't be bothered with, you know, hurricane weather information and having people scatter. They need everybody in the heart of the city to look up and gasp for all of the video. So I thought, wow, there's a hurricane. You know, how the hell did these cars get totaled, you know, a mile and a half away? What
controlled entity that's supposed to find out whether or not the government lied
out into the water? And so I thoroughly devoured everything Dr. Judy Wood. I even contacted her personally and had multiple-hour conversations with her over her work, not to blow smoke up her dress, just because I simply wanted to know, you know, what happened. I'm, at this point, not into waking other people up. You know, I really want to know. And then through your work, I learned of Dave from 911U.org, in his Ground Zero energy surplus analysis, which, though they would probably argue with each other until their faces fell off, they're really not disagreeing on a whole lot. The point is, something else besides thermate, thermite, or C4 was used. The overabundance of energy required simply just to knock that thing over was in effect. The Stephen Jones AE-911 crowd are shills of some kind to lead people down a dark alley. And whether it's directed energy, a mini nuke, or a non-conventional triggered fission nuclear reaction, those are all the four blind men, you know, discussing an elephant by touching all the different parts. I think they're getting at the same thing, and just have different ideas of what initiated that sequence of events. So when I started poring over that, that led me straight into free energy as a topic in general, because obviously to create an energy surplus of that magnitude, you know, if we're talking about a zero point or something very close, that the initial reaction is going to result in more energy output than put in, which is, we've been told this whole time through Newtonian and Einsteinian science, is impossible. Well, apparently it's not, because 9/11 happened, and whatever energy source was used, directed energy or atomic, these buildings turned into, Dr. Judy Wood and Dave both call it molecular dissociation. Whatever instigated the event, these particles literally, not only did the concrete shatter into smaller rocks, those smaller rocks shattered into smaller rocks, that shattered into pebbles, those pebbles turned into dust, and then the dust starts turning into finer and finer particles. It's molecular dissociation. The covalent or valent bonds in each of these larger and larger structures is being reduced to its smaller and smaller components somehow. And if we all know that nuclear weapons, you know, smash apart, you know, just one thing to set off that chain reaction, this is doing it to, you know, skyscrapers full of metal and concrete and glass, people, desks, refrigerators, toilets, yada, whatever. So we're talking about, you know, over unity to the nth degree. You know, it's like lighting, sparking a cigarette lighter and, you know, getting to the moon with the falling. More energy is coming out of whatever happened. So it led me down the free energy trail, which, and I can sum this up instead of taking the whole day around. The UFO phenomena, I think, is intricately tied to this. The reason Alex Jones will not discuss Dr. Judy Wood's work nor 9/11 News work has to do with free energy. The gold dealer that sponsors that station is intimately tied to the dollar devaluation.
What are you talking about? You talking about Ted Anderson and Midas?
Ted Anderson and Midas actually make money as the dollar is devalued. Now, the dollar, and they also stop at the banksters with the pyramid of control. Well, the global banksters, the world reserve currency is the petrodollar. The military-industrial complex of all nations is, petrol-based war machines, guns, jets. Well, some of these tankers are nuclear-powered. The vast majority of the Hummers, the tanks, the bullet, all of this requires oil. The banksters are, by definition, subservient to the military-industrial complex because they enforce this usury planet-wide. And the petrol boys are also
on
top
of
this requires oil. The banksters are.
Okay, this is interesting.
Yeah, so I don't see the banksters at the top of the pyramid. I see them as the middlemen between, corporations that aren't the oil boys and the oil boys. The oil runs everything. The plastic. The fuel, the foreign policy, and how much a dollar is or isn't worth all depends on the oil boys.
All right, Jacob, one thing, when I remember you sent me that email and you were talking about who sits on the file between the oil stuff and the I would say that they are in the same. You take a look at Rockefeller's empire. He came in on the heels of control. And eventually went into pharmaceuticals and was also tied at the hip with Chase through the Aldridges. And so you have pretty much all the basic food groups in one pot. I mean, I'm not going to, split hairs here, but what I think, what you said is true. But I think that what we have is somewhat, selective monopoly, where
right.
Everybody's into everything. It looks like there's actually some kind of, competitive trade, but there's not.
There's not.
All right.
No, and I agree with you. And currently, the upper echelon of the global bankers are the oil boys. Yes, at that intersection, we're talking about the same group. But the oil paradigm itself sits above the money paradigm. See what I'm saying? I agree that the Rockefellers, for example, are in charge of both of those at this day and age. But the oil comes first because they wouldn't have the military or the wherewithal and means to assert their control worldwide.
No, good point. Now that you made me think about this, I don't know, I think this is kind of true as far as what comes first, chickens or eggs, and that is you must have a commodity and the money will follow the commodity.
Correct.
Right. So if you dig oil out of the ground, it doesn't mean anything until you dig it out, and then all of a sudden the money wants to know about that.
Right. And the Standard Oil didn't get its start in oil. They got their start in coal and the railroads and being robber barons. And that mode of transportation was their bread and butter. The railroads weren't the engine of control. Through their neat little contracts, they confiscated with things like eminent domain 5 miles on either side of the railroad for, crashes and repairs and refueling and train stations. That's how they hooked it through. So then, now if you want to put up a hotel, a brothel, an inn, a restaurant, now you got to buy that land from the same people that own the railroad. So the coal and steam industry got these guys their money, which then got us the Federal Reserve. They had all this free cash laying around, and then the coal and steam turns into oil in between there. But the global banking dominance got, we talk about fractional reserve banking and they've only got 10% on reserves. Well, that 10% of the how many ever quadrillion dollar, debt we're talking about is the energy barons of yesterday, all the way up to currently, since it's the same family essentially.
What I'm going to do is, we only have 10 minutes left. If anybody wants to call in and talk to Jacob, and the reason I'd like to do this, Jacob, if it's all right with you, I mean, they can listen to what you have to say in the shows that you do. They may not always get a chance to speak with you.
Sure.
And if it's okay, you know, folks, I'd say, you know, if you want to talk to Jacob, ask a question, everything's fair game. The number is 618-912-4681. That is 618-912-4681. And in the meantime, whether that does happen or not, if you don't mind, let's hit some things if we can in a little bit more of a smaller bit approach, just in case somebody does. It would not be unfair to you to have you go off and then have someone call in, and I would probably allow them to play through. So,
right.
You're all right with that. Now, I'll just say this. You're absolutely right. I mean, this country was pretty much in deep sneakers when the robber barons made their money and then went about buying influence, and especially in the government. I did a series of programs distastefully talked about New York Times sucks off the Fed. But I think it's important because this is what's referred to about the time when Rockefeller was bold enough, along with Carnegie and their foundations, to go ahead and buy influence with newspapers, or just basically get influence with the newspapers. So by 1912 and 13, the Times was extolling the virtues of the Federal Reserve, also along with the fact that they were promoting that the number one bank in that Federal Reserve system would be in New York. And I'm thinking to myself, and these were front page stories, Jacob. I mean, this wasn't commentary or op-ed. This was a supposedly hard news story that was nothing more than propaganda for people to accept the Federal Reserve System. So, and when I did that, that's when I realized it was game, set, match, man. And as Gordon and I have talked about, this whole bit about trust busting with Teddy, you know, shaking his fist, and Sherman in the background, John Sherman, I believe that was, the brother, if I'm correct, with William Sheridan, who was in the Civil War and killed as many Indians as he could.
Right.
The Sherman antitrusting was all baloney. All they did was stop anybody else from chasing them. They already did it. They busted their move. And then when they came with these other laws, they made sure that nobody could do what they did. Beautiful. Freaking beautiful. So
exactly. And then splitting Standard Oil into five separate companies gave it a mask of a non-monopoly, which, you know, a polyopoly. Okay. No more monopolies, but you can have a polyopoly as long as you're brothers of the Shermans or a son of a Rockefeller.
All right. And again, I don't know where you want to take this, but if you want to sit around the center of 9/11, we can do that. I would just say this also. I think after a certain point, like Dave would like argue with me, but I'm thinking that if we continue to talk, and I'm not saying you're doing this, I'm just saying that if we all continue to come back to how it was done, what was there, actually, that becomes a distraction. And I'm not going to call people, government control. I mean, I'm so sick of those labels. But the thing is, what is the point? The point is that the way the government told us the story went down was impossible. And Big Jim in Illinois, in fact, sent me an article where this woman who, it was probably an NPR or something. I mean, God almighty. And somebody was like on our side saying, well, it got to be 4,000 degrees inside the tower. It's like, no, it didn't. No, it didn't. And if you got that crap from NIST, well, guess what? Do you think a government-controlled entity that's supposed to find out whether or not the government lied will come out and say, guess what, the government lied? Are you serious, folks? I mean, this is a kangaroo court.
Right. It's like the HAARP crowd that thinks HAARP is behind every single raindrop on the planet. They'll use HAARP data to prove that HAARP made an earthquake happen.
I've been thinking about doing something where I get the weather from like any channel, and then I come back on with, okay, this is the HAARP weather channel.
Right.
That storm in it? Yeah, we did it. So, all right,
yeah,
I think we got to call it, Jacob, and if that is true, if they're not going to yell at me, I hope they yell at you. So call her if you're there. Come on.
Yell away.
Hey. Am
Hello?
I on?
You are
Am
definitely
on?
On. You are on, bro.
Hey, bro. This is Brian from Lexington, Kentucky. How you doing, guys? I wanted to I have a kind of a different take real quick, I think as, you know, there is like this unified front. Okay, basically this, my theory is Gore actually was supposed to win the 2000 election. And let me give you my reasoning. Because they really, one thing I think we can all agree on is they really want to have the carbon tax thing. So you say, well, if Gore wins the election, would have there been 9/11? Oh, yes. And the reason for 9/11, I don't get into that stuff. I think it's, you know, it could be the most sci-fi thing ever that made that happen. But the reason was to obviously to justify to go into these oil producing areas. But there's two things going on. We're not there to get the oil to give to people. We're there to get the oil just as the beers is to get the diamonds to make it sort of precious and to dole it out and to force people on the carbon system. Also, the two people, groups in the world that they don't control are the Russians and the Chinese. Mm. And we're also there so that the Russians and the Chinese aren't there. That's my first take, because on the surface, it seems counter too, because you figure Bush, oil men, but they don't work that way. Gore is an oil man. He owns one of the largest independent oil producers in the country, a small oil company. So first, what do you think of that?
All right, feel that. And let me just say, folks, I don't mean to be rude, Orion, and thank you for that question. We've got about 3 minutes left. Jacob, you're going to have the last shot on this. Go ahead.
All right. I'll say this. The way the corporation, the United States, not the country, the United States of America, is currently set up, once you register to vote and cast your vote, it's the whole 14th Amendment thing. You're declaring that you're a citizen of the U.S., which means a alien resident of the District of Columbia. There are only three electoral votes cast in every election. The person that becomes president was meant to be, those are all Plan Bs, Plan Cs, and Plan Ds. You're right in the sense that the Middle East is targeted, not necessarily for artificial scarcity, but again, to make sure that the dollar remains the world reserve, the petrodollar remains the world reserve currency. They can't have them trading in rubles or yen or dinars or whatever. It's got to stay at the dollar for all this to happen. The whole thing about the Russians and Chinese, you know, they may own all of our debt, but we buy all of their products. So it's a mutually assured destruction scenario. They will never crash our economy, because in doing so, we'll never buy any more Chinese products, which would in turn crash their economy. Both scenarios have millions of angry people in the streets. Neither government wants that. If they can print up $14 trillion worth of debt, believe me, that debt ceiling will go to infinity dollars if they want it to.
All right, we're going to have to leave at this juncture. Ryan, we appreciate the call, and we have to clear the lines because I have to get William Ramsey on our second guest. So, don't think that we dumped you unceremoniously. We just got to get moving. Folks, you've been listening to Jacob Appelman. The site is GoFindTheOthers.com. All his audio is up there, his archive and such, and have a day with it. And hopefully we can talk soon again, because that's what I'd really like to do, maybe even do a show just with fielding calls. So, Jacob,
absolutely.
All right, yeah, and listen, thanks for having me on. It was really nice of you, and thank you for coming on here. And, I do consider you a kindred spirit, and even if you weren't born, in the 50s and 60s, and I could have had you.
Right, yeah, you're Uncle Viz from now on. How's that? And I'll just say this as a parting comment. I'm honored to be on your show. Like I said, you're one of the others. You're not in it for fame or shame. Just getting to the bottom of this. And if people want to follow this thread through, the free energy deal, when people consider what the inner sanctum of the Third Reich was actually doing with the bell and these flying discs, all the way back to Tesla, in his work during the events of World War I, we're seeing the petro paradigm forcibly annihilating the free energy paradigm, because that is the one and only thing that will shatter this deal.
All right, and I tell you what, maybe if you don't mind coming back, we can do and just explore this whole thing more fully. This is kind of a survey course in a sense, but also people can go to your website, gofindtheothers.com, find out what you have to say about it, but it's more fun with everybody else involved. So, Jacob, thanks very much for coming on, and there's no doubt we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a good rest of the show.
All right, buddy. Adios.
Bye.
All right, folks, I'm out here. Potty break, load up time, and we'll see you in 5 minutes.